Here comes the intro. Skip forward 30 seconds if you want to get right to the episode. This is the Tailboard Talk podcast, the best health, wellness, and lifestyle resource for the fire service. We're using stories, lessons, and tips from the front lines to give a realistic view of what the job can do to us and how we can make it out alive. I'm Chris Morella, a firefighter since 03, medic since 05, full-time since 08, and promoted to lieutenant in 20. I'm also a personal trainer and strength coach, and I'm here to give you the best information and host the best discussions to make us capable and durable, both on the job and away from it. So grab a heater, steal some fancy creamer from First Shift, and let's go chat. Did you listen to the whole galley episode?
No, I didn't get all the way through it.
Did you, in the parts that you listened to, we can just jump right in. In the parts of the galley episode that you listened to, did you hear anything exciting or new information to you that you weren't super aware of before?
I got to be honest, I thought I would have been more aware of the whole resiliency thing, but
I'm glad that you identified that, but it's not what I'm talking about. I'm leading into an apology.
Ah, are you going to apologize about my acting position that I'm in?
Your sub. So, I mean, here's the thing. Well, okay, I'm sorry. Here's the thing.
Thanks.
No problem. First of all, I'm sitting across from Joe Galley, right? And he's
gorgeous.
A thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like all in himself. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you get caught up in that moment of like, I don't know what to, I'm just going to keep talking because he's looking at me and I'm freaking out a little bit. And so, yeah, okay. I know I stumbled a little bit and said that you were the fill-in driver. Now, here's my other, and you're, for the record, you're a stipended important person. Jeez. Give your dog sledgehammers to chew on next time. So for the record, Kurt is a stipended, licensed, full-time engineer operator of Engine 4. And I made a mistake in the Joe Galley episode. So did Joe, to be honest.
Joe did.
I was saying, I think Kurt's a fill-in or he's next for a driver position or whatever. Well, obviously that's false. Now here's the other thing is we both worked on a different shift last year where you were at the same station with the same crew basically, and you were the backup driver on that crew, and then we both move shifts, and then you repicked with that same crew, but now you're the driver.
Right.
Okay, so that's confusing.
Yeah.
Secondly, you're across from a captain, which means I'll never fill in your station.
Correct.
So your station and station two are just black holes on the map of the mind map of Chris because I don't even look at the roster for that day. I'm like, and station two and four are over there somewhere, and who gives a crap? Because I'm not going there.
It's understood.
So in all of that. I did remember that you were on the same shift, but I completely botched your position at the department, and for that, I apologize.
It was funny, because I was listening, and probably within 10 minutes of listening and hearing it, I'm like, hey, and then like, then four people texted me, like, so, just a backup driver now, huh?
Yeah,
like,
well,
yeah, I guess so.
These things happen. You'll have the last laugh, don't worry.
But yeah. Hey, the resiliency committee sounds cool.
But anyways, yeah. It is cool. And that's one of those things, like, he has been working on that for a while, but...
Joe's just so good at everything that it's like, he does something epic like that, and he's just so good at everything else that's going on that it's like, you don't even realize that there's just another amazing thing that he's doing.
I mean, I even told Patrick and Joe in a group text, I said, this week's going to be a huge fall from grace. From the past few episodes, because we're just going to talk about jumping jacks again.
Listener drops again.
Yeah, we're getting back to the roots of this thing, but it's still a firefighter show. And one of the things that Kurt and I have endured and encountered a ton of times is people coming up to us with advice that they've been given on the health and safety or health and wellness front. And I've been taken back by some advice, or at least some of the programs would be like, hey, I'm doing this style of training now. What do you think? And I've been like, never heard of it. Don't think it's a thing, but I have to go like, I'm going to give you a generic answer of what I think you should be doing.
Right.
Pretending like I know what you're talking about in contrast to this program. And then I'll go look this thing up later, maybe.
Yeah.
But firefighters are prime tickets, man, because we have the sleep schedule that's jacked up and nutrition that we choose to jack up a lot. And then we look for like, hey, what's the secret thing out there we can do? And time again, like you just shared, we were doing some training for the department the other day and you shared an article with me and it was like, that's just perfect, you know? Mm-hmm. And do you have that pull? Did you write down what that was?
The Vice article that I sent you? I didn't write it down. I just, the scope of it was, is that there's a study done that's basically shows that instead of working out 30 minutes a day with moderate to high intensity exercise, you can cluster that all together on one day. And as long as on a weekly level, you're getting 3 hours of high intensity exercise, you're okay. So basically it's saying you don't need to work out 5 days a week or consistently. You just need to do it all at once on the weekend or whenever you have a 3 hour block.
Yeah.
And it's just so misleading to a population that's already looking for the easiest way out. And we know like there's 0% chance that anybody is going to cluster 3 hours of high intensity workout together on a weekend and keep it high intensity to the level that they would during the week if they were, you know, 30 minutes a day, yeah, type thing. And so it just seemed like a really irresponsible study to publish to a population, whether it's fire department or globally, you know, that we're already sedentary enough. Don't give people another reason to stop being proactive. And I looked up the stats a little bit ago, and I want to say it's like 6% of people now in the United States have a gym membership and use it. And so like now you're going to go to those 6% and be like, yeah, you don't have to do it that much actually.
Yeah. And the other ones just have it, but don't use it. Is that,
yeah, part I think of that stat? I want to say 17% have a gym membership, wow, and 6% use it with, you know, like a frequency of 2 times a week type average. Jeez. And, So you're going to go to those. You're not catching outliers. You're not catching the people who are like, I'd love to start working out. I just don't have 30 minutes a day.
Yeah.
Oh, but now it says I can do it 3 hours on Saturday. Yep.
But time I do to have 3 hours.
Time to get going, you know?
Well, I pulled up the body of text from the post from Vice, and there's a lot of liberties taken in this thing. First of all, they called a decade-long study of 350,000 adults in the U.S., so here's the first thing is, you know, that this is a questionnaire.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be, right?
Yeah.
And so self-reporting is one of the best ways to screw up anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because they also have in this caveat again, whether these findings suggest that whether the recommended amount of moderate to vigorous physical activity is spread out during the week or concentrated in fewer days, there may be no significant difference in health benefits. So right there, you have a ton of leeway or a ton of fudge factor of like, what do you consider moderate or vigorous? And what does the person they're asking consider moderate or vigorous?
Correct.
I cannot imagine, well, I can, but it'd be like in a triathlon or something like that form, moderate to vigorous exercise of my own doing for 3 hours.
Mm-mm.
It's just not feasible.
No.
Here's the other thing is, in there, they said, so just in that, they said, whether it's spread out during the week or concentrated into fewer days, there may not be significant difference in health benefits. Vice took it a step further and said one day.
Yeah.
So to me, it says like, hey, you don't have to run, you don't have to do high intensity stuff 7 days a week. You can get away with 3 times a week plus like 2 or 3 other supportive workouts.
Mm-hmm.
The vice is being like, just kill yourself one day a week and you're good.
And then the last sentence may,
right?
You know, it right. may work for you.
Right. Now, luckily in the comments, there was nobody supporting this thing. There are people saying they reported the article for disinformation. They were saying good luck making any kind of progress, good luck actually doing it. So it doesn't seem like a ton of people buy into it, but I could definitely see it as something in the back of your head as a person who exercises frequently being like, well, I didn't get to work out yesterday and I'm skipping today because I have too much stuff going on. As long as I just work out this weekend, right?
Right.
And you put it off for 3 more days.
Yeah.
And then that day comes and you're like, I'm not working out for 3 hours. Maybe I'll just do 20 minutes because I got a lot of I don't want to be in the gym for 3 hours.
Right.
And then you have one 20-minute workout that was kind of half-assed,
mm-hmm,
for the entire week. So it's led you down a path of destruction, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just one of them, right? That was one thing that I could absolutely see some of our people coming to us and be like, hey, what do you think about just working out once a week? Because I read this thing in Vice that said, I can pretty much just do one workout a week.
Yeah.
One of the other ones, I suppose it's advice, but it's definitely a scheme that people are told to do, is like the bodybuilding split, mm-hmm, training, right? Or block training, or however you
right.
Segment it up, where it's like Monday is chest and arms and Tuesday is back and buys and
mm-hmm,
there's a leg day in there, right? And you had a conversation with a guy not too long ago about that and kind of steered him towards the way we program is like an overall body thing right. majority of days, right?
Yep.
What were your points on that whole thing?
Well, my point on it was, is like those splits, there's typically like a 5-day split that they'll put in there. And so if you say you have a bad day on the ambulance and you're up all night, and then the next day is your leg day, and you're like, you know what, I just don't want to do it. I'm just not feeling good. I should go catch up on some sleep. Then you're missing that day till the next week. Whereas if you program along movements and trying to incorporate movement patterns, it's like, okay, well then maybe Monday, the day before your shift, you did do some legs because you're doing movement versus, you know, a bodybuilding split. It's not as significant that you skip a day then and recover on some sleep, you know. But it's just, they're just, when you follow a rigorous thing like that, you miss out anytime that there's a hole or a gap in, you know, your training consistency. Yeah. You know, the other part of that is kind of what we've always talked about is pushing and pulling with your upper body and using your hips with your lower body. Like, I feel like oftentimes a bodybuilding split works great for what it's intended for as bodybuilders, but it isn't always as great for an injury prevention or performance improvement program. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of what I tried to convey to him that, calf raises are awesome, but, you know, we got to work some other joints in there too.
Yeah. Well, I suppose people gravitate towards it though, because it's simple, right?
Like, right.
You can write down five or go to the chest area of lifetime and hit five chest machines.
Dude. And if you can follow it and it's better than nothing, you know, and if that's what gets you to go in and have a plan, then awesome. And yes, there is some variety in there. Cause it's not, you're not just going to go in and do, I feel like doing bench today. Cause that's what's open, you know? And so if it gets you a plan and it gets you some consistency, it's certainly better than zero. But yeah, it's there's gaps in it, you know?
Well, there's gaps and there's traps too of like, most of us feel really good doing chest and back workouts. Mm-hmm. And then maybe I'll just keep pushing off leg day, you know?
Yeah.
And then you do have your bad night on the ambulance. Now I'm not going to do it. And this turns into a routine, right? Mm-hmm. We just did training in our department where we got trap bars and bumper plates, specifically for the purpose that most people don't deadlift with a straight bar anymore because it's uncomfortable. Like you did it in high school, maybe, probably not very well, but intensity was able to carry you physically through that experience. And then you go back to it in your 30s or after college or something like that, and it doesn't feel good. The position's weird. You're less mobile than you were before, and the intensity's not there.
Right.
So you put a wheel on each side, which is what every grown male starts at, right, is 135. And it humbles you because 135 looks doable.
Right.
And then 135 gives you a sore back, and you see a guy next to you pulling 315, right? So you're like, well, I guess I'm just doing the pec deck again. And then we don't do it. And that means that when we're at work, you're picking up either the pen you dropped on the floor or the oxygen bag or a 500-pound person. Like, there's very few middle grounds there. And that gap in frequency is like a big risk factor. So we got trap bars and we got bumper plates specifically because deadlifts can really suck sometimes. And so let's give these guys a tool that you can still pull from the floor heavy with and load up and feel safe with and get going again. But yeah, left your own devices, if you just go to a Lifetime or something like that, even if they have a deadlift machine or a hip thrust machine, like, not a lot of guys are jumping on the hip thrust machine, right?
Yep. Yeah, well, and we've talked about it too. And I'm even guilty of it in with my programming knowledge of like, if I go to the gym, say I go make a hotel workout and I make 100 of them. Say I stay at a hotel 100 times this year, 0 times am I going to do pushups in the hotel because I hate pushups. Yeah. It's just the way it's going to be, you know? So if I don't program them, I'm going to miss them, you know? And that's the thing with not going in with a plan is, you're going to gravitate towards the things that you like and away from the things that you hate. And so if you hate doing lunges and you don't have a plan going in, guess what you're not going to do when you go in?
Yeah.
Lunges.
Yeah. So, I mean, that is a call to action to outsource a little bit, right? But you also have to be willing to outsource. There's certainly been times that I've asked people to program for me. And then when it gets down to it, I'm like, I'd rather just do this stuff. I don't feel like doing this person's program because I am tired and I know what 4 or 5 things I can do today to fill the gap and get a workout in, you know? So being willing to outsource it but I guess more willing to follow the goal would be more important to that. What advice or what stuff did you have kind of jotted down?
I mean, actually on that one, I have, and some of these are global. So like this one's like unsolicited, unprofessional advice. And, like in the department, I always have a joke of like, firemen love to say like, you know what you should do. And then it follows it up with something that they have no experience in, yeah. but that's what you should do. And so like, while intentions are sometimes good, something that works for you, there's definitely a chance it could really not work for somebody else. And so a lot of times we have unsolicited, unprofessional opinions given to us versus actually seeking out an intelligent, intellectual opinion. And, you know, and that goes even with nutrition, you know, it's like, fucking, sorry, keto people can't wait to tell you how little sugar is in their,
or how much sugar is in something you're eating.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like, I don't care. Like if I wanted to know about your keto experience, I would ask you, hey, like, you look good. Have you lost some weight? What are you doing? Because yeah. I would like to apply that.
Yeah.
But they can't, like, vegans can't wait to tell you everything wrong with what you're doing. And I feel like that transitions over to the workout stuff, too, is it's like we get a lot of, like, oh, yeah, you know, you should do this, you know, here's the shoulder exercise, or here's this BOSU ball thing yeah. that I saw. And it's like, you absolutely should not do that, and you should seek out someone if you want the information, you should seek out a professional.
We can call that like TikTok advice then, because I have a few clients that subscribe to like the Gym Fail Nation or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they'll send me these things like, and I always have to ask them like, are you sending me this for entertainment value or because you're interested in
right.
it? What are we doing here?
Yeah.
And thankfully most of the time it's like, oh, this is hilarious. Just watch this guy fall off the pull-up bars. Right. right? But there's been a few that are, we have the equipment for them to possibly do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to be like, we are just looking at this for laughs, right? We're not actually going to try this.
Yeah. So like Seedman's a classic, like right down the middle of like, yeah, this guy says that he trains professional athletes. He has professional athletes in his videos, and here's a thing. And so then I'm always like, are you asking me if this is good or are you laughing at this right now? And,
oh yeah.
Yep.
What do you think about, we kind of talked on it before we got going, but we've had a lot of people who have sore backs, right? And their solution to that back pain is stretching their back more, mm-hmm. because it's not a clear path to draw between my back hurts and my hips don't work well, or I was doing this in my fire gear and after that I have a sore back. The issues in their mind is their back,
right?
Not all the other stuff that goes into it, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you usually tell somebody when they come to you and be like, hey, I just need some back stretches because my back's been tight recently, or I had this call where we lifted this person, my back's sore, so give me something to stretch my back out.
Yeah. I think that we've come to know that there's not a lot of stretching to actually be done in your back that has true benefit. There's instant relief.
And this is lower back.
Lower back.
This is like belt line, right at the hips, lower
yeah,
back. I'm
yeah. And so what we know is there's not a lot of stretches that actually solve the problem. There's things that give you like temporary relief, but within a couple of minutes, it's back to the same situation. So it's a feel good at the time, but we know that most likely it's a problem somewhere upstream or downstream. And so, you know, for us, and I said it in our training, you know, we had landmine and trap bar training, and it's like guys are in their duty boots and our pants and our belts, and so there's some limiters on your major joint movers there. And, you know, kind of as you said, is movement's going to get donated from your low back when it gets stuck in other places. And so even though we're asking someone to pick something off the ground, if their hips, whether it's their own hip mobility or they have something like a belt and tight pants on that doesn't let them bend down all the way, there is going to be movement from another place. And so sometimes the pain symptom shows up in your back, but it's not your back that's the problem. It's, you know, your hips that are the problem. The symptom's just shown up at your back because it did the work that it wasn't supposed to do. So oftentimes with that, I'm trying to mobilize something first before I do anything else. So it's almost always the hips. It's like, all right, well, let's see how your, you know, hip rotation looks, and let's mobilize your thoracic spine. Yeah. And those are kind of my two go-tos for movement of getting those joints moving versus, am I going to get a stretch through your back? My movement specifically for lower back that I give is walking. Like I just want people to walk, you know? So if your back tightens up or whatever, just going out for a walk is going to be what I think is typically a pretty therapeutic thing that you can do to get some relief off of it.
Yeah. I've heard walking backwards and specifically uphill is really good for it because mm-hmm. you're activating everything more or less, you know, mm-hmm. than just walking forward, or as opposed to just walking forward if you can. So recently we had a guy that had a lot of back pain and he's got a big yard. And so I told him, like, don't worry about stretching. Don't worry about lifting anything or whatever, right? Because you're just going to irritate the problem you have potentially. But go out and walk, you know, face north and walk to the edge of your property and then walk backwards back up that very slight kind of hill. He has like a 2% grade in his backyard. Just walk back and forth 10 times, 5 times and see how you feel, you know, and take that little bit of relief or that little bit of muscle activation. And maybe it gets a little warm and you get moving a little bit. That's not your green light to go lift an engine out of a car, but that's like, okay, this is something I can do to get me moving for the day.
Right.
And now I can survive until I can go to bed, you know? You know, I tend to focus a lot on, so I'll trick people a little bit with this one where I'll more or less give them what they want, but I'll give them a hip stretch and a piriformis or butt stretch that makes their back feel better. And it's a stretch that they, you know, if you do like the sitting on your butt, cross your ankle over your opposite knee and bring your knee to your chest kind of thing. So you're in that figure four position. Or even if you're just sitting and cross your legs over and hug your knee to your chest, you can definitely make that a lower back stretch.
Yeah.
Right. Or you can coach it as like belly button out and tall posture and don't hug your knee. Just draw it in as tall as you can without rounding forward. You can focus it almost 100% on your butt and your hips. So I'll cue them both ways. I'll give them the back stretch and be like, this isn't going to do much good, but it's going to feel good. And then we'll show them the way to stretch out your hips with it. And then when they stand up, they're like, oh, I feel way less tension in my back. Like, it's not just that my back feels better now, but it's not being pulled on. Because releasing your butt and you're stretching out your hips is going to stop pulling on your back, and then maybe you're a little bit better, right?
Yeah.
The other thing I notice is that there's a large amount of guys we work with who have just no ass at all. Like, it is just flat wall, like concave wall from their shoulder blades down to their ankles, you know? And that's just something that happens over time. But when you lose your butt muscles, your back, your lower back is going to compensate for the lack of hips you have. And that's a bummer, but that's the way it is too. So if you're walking around and your belt is around your butt crack, you know, you likely have a lack of butt muscles. That's something that stretching isn't going to help. Like lifting weights, resistance training, getting what little butt muscle you have in the game a little bit is going to help drastically. So it's definitely a longer fix, which I think a lot of people continue to have back pain for decades and decades because they get to a level of feeling decent. And then that's the end of that, you know, and then all they want is that stretch. I just want to feel better for 5 minutes.
Right.
And then I'll do that a million times if I have to.
Yeah. And two things with like backs just real quick is that one is it's really hard to turn off. So it's like, if you have a knee injury, you can limp and mostly avoid pain, but like, it's not, you can't do that with your back. There's very few things you can be like, well, if I just go here, I'm not going to hurt.
Yeah.
And the other thing is there's so much less room for swelling in that area. So when you do have an injury and you do have inflammation, there's no place for it to go. And so it presses on things with much less inflammation and it just doesn't disperse as much as joints do. And so sometimes that just lingers longer and you just have to unfortunately give it time, which sucks to hear for most people, but it's just the way it is.
Yeah,
there's very few like, you know, quick fix it, do this stretch and you'll be good. It's like, do the stretch for the next couple of weeks and give it time and understand that it'll be good.
Well, it's a lot like, I think people view back injuries and a lot of overuse injuries is like, I did this thing and now it hurts.
Right.
So I was 100% fine before I picked up that patient. Now my back is in pain, you know?
Right.
And it's like, people ask us like, well, how fast can I lose this weight? And you have to be like, well, it took you 38 years to get this fat.
Right.
It's going to take you a little bit of time to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. Same thing with back injuries. You didn't know it because you didn't have any obvious symptoms, but it's taken you your entire life to develop this situation you have in your back.
Right.
It just happened to be really bad right now, but you've been building that injury for a long, long time.
Right.
And so when you kind of help try to start explaining that, it's like, oh, this isn't a cramp in my leg. This isn't a Charlie horse. This is like a thing that's been building and I have a lot of stuff feeding into it that I need to remedy before this goes away. But that, like you said, it sucks to hear and it's a tough thing to communicate, but that's why bad advice is so prevalent because there's a lot of quick fixes and patches and home stim devices and I mean, whatever else you want to pay money for that's out there for you. Are you well versed on the pros and cons of using ice versus heat for injuries?
I wouldn't call myself well versed. I know that there's been a significant trend from professionals away from ice anymore, and on to heat is the preferred method of, you know, environmental therapy to use.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, advice that I've started. I mean, I haven't iced anything in a long time.
Right.
You know, the idea of it is that your body provides its own inflammation response. And if you ice something and you reduce your body's inflammation response, then you're slowing the healing process that your body's trying naturally.
Right.
Kind of the same thing as like taking Advil right away is like, don't jump to right away an anti-inflammatory if your body's trying to repair itself. Mm. I haven't dove much deeper into that, but that's from the people that I respect who have talked about it. That's the gist that I've got from it.
That's a majority of it. I mean, they so there's a book, I think it's called The Meltdown, and it's essentially written by the person who created the Rice method of injury mm-hmm. fixing, right? And then he said, like, this was taken way out of context.
Yeah.
The main takeaway is that he said, don't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. And we've heard several other professionals. I think Sue Falcioni went into that in depth because mm-hmm. that was one of her major struggles as a Major League Baseball trainer, I think, was she was trying to convince these pitchers to stop icing their arms.
Oh, that was a huge thing for us is we had the Dixie cups and we'd freeze them in ice and then you'd like give yourself an ice. Yeah. You'd tear it down and you'd work that ice cube all the way to the bottom.
Yeah. And that was her big fight was like, we need to get these guys to stop icing their arms mm-hmm. after games. It's slowing down their recovery.
Yeah.
We can have them back a day sooner mm-hmm. with the same pitch count if we stop icing.
All right.
And, she ran into like the, not the ego, but like these guys who had been icing their arms since 5 years old.
Yeah.
Right. And now they're in their mid 20s or whatever. And they got millions of dollars on the line. They're like, I'm not going to stop doing this thing. That's been an absolute comforting staple for me because you think you're smart.
Right.
And at that point you have a $10 million athlete arguing with a $300,000
right.
coach, you know, mm-hmm. guess who's going to win that argument. Yeah. Right. So, in any case, the bottom line for that one is, the icing something may feel good, like stretching something. It may feel good for a couple minutes when it's numb, mm-hmm. right? When your skin is numb, but the problem isn't helped at all. You're slowing down the recovery and healing process. All those fluids in there that are trying to turn over and flush stuff out, you cool them down, you slow them down. Mm-hmm. So now they're not able to flush and kind of flow through there as easily or frequently as they should. Heat and movement. You know, therapeutic movement are the two things that can actually make a difference because you're not going to stop the inflammation. You're just going to make it last longer.
Yeah.
And then it's going to take longer to heal. You're going to freeze that stuff in place, not free literally, but you're going to lock that fluid in place because it can't leave because it's cold now. Mm-hmm. And now that discomfort just lingers for longer.
Yeah.
Now compression is another one. I don't know much about that. Like the Normatec boots, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I think that probably has more validity into it. We've always heard like, you know, the calf is the second heart. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to pump your calf to circulate blood below your knee.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I do think that compression probably has some validity to it.
Yeah.
I haven't looked into it that much.
I haven't either.
People, it's also far more far more accessible.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to jump into an ice bath or a garbage can full of ice or whatever, right?
Nope.
Except for looking cool on Instagram. But you tell me to zip on these mast pants and watch a show.
Yeah.
It's going to give my legs hugs.
Yep,
like I'm down with that. Right. I'm not directly plugging them, but those used to be, so Normatec is Hyper Ice.
Okay.
Same company. They released their Normatec boots.
Mm-hmm.
That's like half the price now. Cause they're like, these things are cool and they're great for pro teams, but they're like way too expensive.
Yeah.
So they made everything smaller and it's like less than $1,000 now, and they're just flying. You know, they're pushing everything out.
Yep.
So maybe I'll see if I can get a pair of those.
People love a discount.
I caught my eye.
Yep.
I'm like, hey man, call my Hyper Ice guy and get a demo pair of these bad boys.
Absolutely.
All right, what else do you have on your list? We're getting right at we're like just under 30 minutes, so we're good. But
I had advice from Outliers.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of times we get like The Rock, you know, or Ray Lewis, you know, people that are the 0.5% people that can actually sustain more activity than other people and have a support staff of everything, you know? So you watch The Rock's Instagram and the dude travels with a gym. Like he
right.
literally brings a gym everywhere he goes.
Yeah.
But then you watch The Rock's cheat Sundays where he has
whatever he has.
It's like, well, that The Rock is not you, and never will be.
But we'll see you guys match that level of gluttony.
Yeah.
And that, but the rest of your week is that level of gluttony just spread out over more days.
Exactly. And so, there's a lot of things on Instagram that you're like, that's what this guy does. So that's what I should do and should be doing. It's like, those people they're just built differently, born differently, and we won't be that person ever, and you just got to let that go.
Yeah. And The Rock, I mean, so he's been in the game for a long time, right? Wrestling and now showbiz and stuff like that and doing movies. Mm-hmm. He's the outlier in that aspect too.
Right.
Like you're not going to, there's all the giant movie stars that you can think of that are physical like that. So like Tom Cruise is a great example, right? Mm-hmm. If you start thinking of like Jason Statham, guys like that, you can only think of a handful of them because there's only a handful of them.
Right.
Right. The other ones are just like a pro athlete career of like 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. And then you're out doing something else or you're just done.
Yeah.
So not only can you not train sustainably like that because, like you said, we don't have $1 million to throw at a support team, we also have to do something that can be done for up to 30 years.
Right.
And those guys aren't doing it. With all that money they can throw out, they're not doing it for 30 years.
No.
The Rock still might be wrestling, I don't know, from time to time. That's not the way he's making a living.
No.
Right? So it might be a guest appearance, then he regrets it for 2 months afterwards.
You're right.
they're doing things that are cool, but you probably won't see them doing 5, 6, 7 years from now.
I'll say, man, watching Top Gun 2 with Tom Cruise sprinting, I'm like, man, how old is this guy? Dude's like 60, sprinting on the beach still. Yeah. Not a lot of people do that anymore.
No, Scientology.
Yeah.
That's what gets you.
Mm-hmm.
He's levitating to Mars or wherever.
And money.
he's running on money. Yeah. He's got $100 bill stuffed shoes that pad everything for him. Anything else? What do you got?
I had the catchphrase stuff. The strong is the new skinny.
Yeah.
I think we talked about too, like, I just need to stretch more.
Stretch more is a big one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so those things that are catchy phrases but aren't the solution. Strong is the new skinny. I think that goes a little bit further outside of the fire service, and obviously kind of curtails to the female population a little bit more. But
well, I think we have guys that chase the opposite of that. They'd rather be skinny than strong.
We do.
Like we've had a handful of guys that got really into yoga or endurance sports, right? And they did really well in those respective fields, but then you'd ask them to pick up grandma who weighs 90 pounds and they're going to blow an O-ring out because they have no idea how to handle their body. Like yoga does, but any kind of external load where you're leveraged is like blowing their mind.
Right.
So I think guys in our profession would rather almost be skinny fat, but skinny compared to strong, which will build a physique you want and the ability to do stuff.
I think it's an easy way out too. If like getting strong is a lot harder than staying skinny.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Ty, you talked about very disparagingly and disrespectfully, we talked about keto before, but we have guys doing keto now because they're like, when I was 24, I did keto and I dropped like 50 pounds in 2 months. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, how's it going now? He's like, well, I'm 34 and I'm not dropping that much weight, but I definitely have the shits all the time.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, what are you doing? He's like, well, it worked last time. And I think it's good. And then coincidentally, they do CrossFit. I said, well, are you at least feeling good doing CrossFit then? Like, you don't feel good.
Right.
It's not working weight wise, but are you at least finding any benefit towards your lifts? He's like, no, I'm so weak.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, good dude.
Right.
2 more months and see how you feel. It's just, I think we're just a little misguided, a little underinformed, but.
Well, and it's like, I don't know. It's the whole thing with those is like people tout like whatever, but it's like, don't you think it's just the reduction of like hyper palatable, like fat and carb items, like you're not eating a nutty bar anymore.
Yeah.
You can eat real fast. It tastes good, but it doesn't satiate you.
Yeah.
So you've stopped eating those. That's what's good about this. It's not that you've eliminated, and stop saying you don't eat carbs. That's broccoli on your plate. Like stop saying that.
Yeah. If you're going to vilify a nutty bar the same as you do snap peas,
right,
we got bigger issues.
Right.
Or you can't eat any rice, but you can eat 3 pounds of cauliflower rice. Mm-hmm. There's just a,
Yeah.
There's the substitution fallacy there. That's strong in that community and that theory.
But that's the thing is like people that write the books on it, they're making millions off of suckers, And it's you wrote a book and if people follow it, they'll probably have success, but it's not because it's not because of that. It's because of what they eliminated. You know? And it's
like, well, I've said it several times. I can't remember here or otherwise of like, if you think back to all the infomercials that were on TV, like the torso tiger or whatever, right? It could be an arm exercise machine where it's like, you can do bicep curls with this thing. But they'll promise weight loss with it, right? And when they're running through, like, if you spend $49.99 right now, you're going to get the bicep bandit and you're going to get these toning bands. You're going to get our 16-week meal plan. It's like, oh, you're going to starve these people. You're going to starve them and do bicep and do curls for fourteen weeks.
And your machine's going to work because they're on 1,000 calories.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't work, it's like, well, you didn't follow our plan.
Exactly.
You just did the bicep curls.
Yeah. So everything comes down to that, right? And so, yeah, people will funnel it back to that improperly or inappropriately. But, yeah, we're chasing – I mean, we're chasing some good stuff. It's always going to help to be lighter most times. That's a pretty general statement.
And that's – yeah. I mean, there's definitely an inverse relationship in your sustainability and your BMI. You know, if you have a high BMI – it's going to catch up with you at some point in time. You know, it's just harder on your body long-term.
Yeah. That resiliency on both ends of the spectrum, right? Super, super obese and on the high end or on the very frail end, your margin of error goes down dramatically. I think that's a good, maybe when one of these we'll talk about just that, the margin of error kind of idea about it. You know, we've talked a lot about with Raph about that, your envelope and your margin of error and the amount of slop you can get away with. And, you know, if you're in that middle part, how much more you have, basically, how many more mistakes you can make before you're actually compromised. So that was a good one, man. I'm sure this will be like every other one we stop recording. We'll be like, oh, there's this thing of these stories or that stories, you know? So I'm sure we'll do this again. I like taking specific examples like this that we've been confronted with instead of just touting what people should do.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with talking a little trash sometimes.
That's what
we
do.
Yeah. Why not? All right. Which is a lot more editing. All right. If you guys dig it, check us out on Instagram. Check out the 4Shift Fitness stuff on Instagram. Subscribe and rate and like wherever that happens. Just kind of heard about that the other day that I should be saying that. So I'm not sure exactly where to point people in doing that. But if you know how or where to do it, do that. You can always send Kurt and I coffee money. There's the Buy Me a Coffee page. We've switched over to hot coffee today because it's 50 degrees outside and Katie left the windows open last night. So it's 27 degrees in my house right now. So I'm hitting the hot coffee hard today. You can always do that. And that helps support the show. And we bribe Kurt and other guests to come on and talk for a little bit. So we'll talk to you guys soon. And that's it.